You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Certainly is. 9:05, Ken in for Joanne, and one final hour for me, and sitting across from me is Walter Azzi from Renovco, of course. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ken. I miss you.
Oh, thank you very much. I miss talking to you, giving me all kinds of advice, especially travel advice.
Yeah, anything.
The odd
marriage advice, counseling.
Home renovation home projects to take care of.
I do it all.
Wears many hats. Many hats. How was your week?
My week was good. Busy.
You recently celebrated a milestone birthday, too, so that's been fun.
Yeah, thank you for coming. It was your presence graced us, actually. It was a lot of fun. It was have you there with Loretta. It was really a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. It was lovely. And so let's mention the phone number, by the way. 514-790-0800. You have a question for Walter you want to take care of, let us know. And you can send in a text as well at 514-800. Is it a busy time of the year for you?
It is a very busy time, definitely. You know, we have to look at the whole market conditions. The fact of the matter, we still have, there's still a shortage of supply of homes in Quebec. So, you know, regardless of what the interest rates are doing, regardless of how much we heat up the market or we cool off the market, the truth is people need still to live somewhere. So I have a feeling that, you know, at the beginning people kind of slowed down a little bit on that and then realized that, you know what, we can't wait a year, 2 years, 3 years. We have to do something. And then you see that there's this movement. People that are not selling, they're definitely renovating. But there's definitely a real movement in the real estate market. And I have a feeling it's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter as the years are going to go by.
All right. 514-790-0800. We're going to go to Saint-Marc-sur-le-Lac for a phone call here. Peter, is that you?
Yes. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Very good. How are you this morning?
Okay, fine. Thanks for taking my call. I had a unique problem with the electricity in my house and on the upper floor. I lost power on one side of the house, and I just wanted to have an idea of what might the problem be before I call an electrician. Thank you.
Okay, so do you have, is everything on the same panel, or do you have like sub-panels somewhere in the house?
Yeah, I believe it's on the same panel, yes.
Okay. And you've made sure that you've obviously checked the breakers?
Yes, it seems to be normal.
Okay. Have you tried turning off and turning the breakers back on?
Yes, I did try that. Yes.
Okay. Now, as far, what kind of a panel do you have? What's the brand?
It's a 200 amp, but I'm not sure of the brand, but it was recently, it's only a few years old. Just give me a minute, I'll tell you right away. Sorry about that.
No, sorry.
Thank you very much.
As long as he's back before 10, we're good.
That's fine. We can wait.
Okay, the panel right in front of it now. Simons.
Okay, Simons. That's a good brand.
Yes. So,
okay, and you said it's a few years old, so it's definitely not the panel.
I don't believe so.
Okay, and did you check for any other outages in the region? And like, did you check with Hydro for any other outages?
No, everything seems to be normal. I talked to a neighbor, everything seems to be normal. This problem seems to be intermittent because just the other night, the power came back on this side where there was a problem.
Okay, that's not particularly normal, no.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, and now you don't have the power.
No, I don't have the power. No, not this morning, no.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, what circuits are on that? Like, is the furnace on it or anything that is that could consume loss of electricity?
No, I don't. There's very few appliances on that circuit, very few.
Okay.
It's separate from the furnace and all that.
So yesterday you said you had the power back.
Yes, it came back, but like this morning it's gone again.
Okay.
On that particular section of the house.
To be quite frank with you, I don't even think it's a panel problem. What I would do is I would start with Hydro-Québec themselves.
Okay, all right.
And then they would tell you if there's any anomalies from their end on their network. I mean, it did happen before in certain households that this happened and there was a problem with the hydro itself. So I don't think it's anything wrong with the panel. If there was something wrong with the panel and you would have lost the power, you would never have had it back. So I have a feeling it's definitely a hydro problem.
Okay, I'll give them a call on Monday then. That's good advice.
Okay. Or you could you can even call them today. You don't have to wait till Monday.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. I will. And just in case I need an electrician, does your company
Yeah, we can help you out.
Okay, we're not full, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, okay, very good. Okay, thank you very much. Have a nice day.
My pleasure, Peter. Can you update us, please, when you know what the situation was?
Yeah, okay, of course. I'll do that. Be my pleasure. Thank you. Okay. Have a good day.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Ken.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. 514-790-0800, or the text line if you want to reach out to Walter at 514-800. Do you get calls at Renopco for fences for swimming pools?
Fences around swimming pools.
You know the protective fences.
Yeah, we do, because now that they changed the code and you have to have every pool, even if you're fenced pool yard, you have to still have a fence around the pool. And when they first came out with that change in code, they actually were obliging everyone to have those fences at, I believe, 38 inches from the pool. But most pools have those walkways or that border around it, and that border is 36 inches. So it was a big issue for most homeowners, because now you would have to, you can install a fence on 2 inches. I mean, they have a 2-inch void that you would have to have poured concrete in those areas. So it took forever to get them to realize that, I know you have safety concerns, and part of the calculation, if someone is tall and drunk and they fall off, and like the physics did not make sense. That's how they determined it have to be 38 inches. Just they made it too complicated for no reason. And luckily, we're back into the 36-inch mark now, so people can install their fences on those borders without having to pour another walkway.
Are they more or less the same type of fence, or is there a variety in the type of fence you can put up in terms of the look?
I mean, there's a whole bunch that you could. I mean, the most popular, I guess, are glass fences, because it's see through and
transparent. Sun. Yeah,
In a lot of cases, if you have smaller backyard and you add another fence and have a pool, it does look cumbersome, and the glass, I would say, it would be the most popular. I mean, you can go as crazy as the glass that disappears. It goes, down into the ground, and then you press a button, goes back up again.
I know.
Yeah, but then we're taking this
James Bond
to a totally different level, right?
Right. But aside from the mechanics, are the glass fences more expensive?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
100%. Okay. 100%.
Walter Assey, that's him right there. 514-790-0800 is our phone number. Call now if you want to pick his brain about something.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
About 20 minutes after 9, you can reach Walter right now at 514-790-0800. The Walter I'm talking about is Walter Assey from Renovco. Let's go to Angelo out in St. Leonard. Angelo, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding our cement balcony. This spring, a couple of pieces fell off the underside of the of the balcony at the front edge. So right now, if I'm looking at the balcony over the garage, I'm missing a section of cement roughly the size of a banana. When I see where the pieces fell off, I see that the rebar is right close to the edge and it's rusted. So, and I've got a hairline crack all along the front edge of the balcony, where there's like a channel to prevent the water from seeping back. There's a hairline crack all along. So I'm wondering, if I just patch it up, it's going to, it won't solve the problem. There might be an underlying problem.
Hmm.
I feel like I'm walking under the metropolitan or something. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, believe me.
We have a visual on that.
We all know what you mean. So, yeah, the rebar rusting is an issue. That means you do have water finding its way through the concrete. So what I would recommend in this case is you chisel at the concrete until it's not loose anymore. So pretty much what they do in the Metropolitan, as you know, you see it, they like put a, they mark it with a spray paint, and then they kind of put a small jackhammer on it until, and they keep on chiseling at it until it becomes solid. If you feel that you're going beyond that rebar, or there's a way that you could put build a form and then install the rebar and then re-pour it, that would be the greatest. If
okay,
not,
this is the other side of the cement. The balcony itself is probably 6 inches or more thick. I gather they just came too close to the edge, but the house is 40 years old, so it's lasted this long.
Yeah, yeah.
So who can I call to do that kind of repair?
So any company that specializes in masonry, so bétonnier or you know, cement contractors, there is a profession in Quebec for béton. That, but you know, you have to make a distinction. These are not the same guys that usually pour foundations. These guys really are the bétonniers, cement people.
People who pour foundations?
These people would not help you. That's not their specialty. The people that pour foundations, they pretty much own the forms to do foundations, and that's all what they're interested to do. But there's another professions. I mean, if you Google cimentier, you're gonna have a whole you're gonna have a whole bunch of guys that are gonna pop out. The closest to your area is gonna be probably your best option. They like to work local as much as possible because their suppliers are also chosen that way as well. So if they need to have a concrete truck, depending on the size of the job, usually they you know, they would choose someone from the area. So if you call a guy in the East End, it might not be as interesting for them. Now the other thing that you might wanna look into is the other area of your balcony. Do you need to maybe seal the concrete to ensure that there's a certain waterproofing on it, that you don't have that water that is penetrating, and then specifically in the winter it freezes and expands.
Seal the top of the actual balcony itself. That's correct.
Because what's probably happening is, I mean, water is getting in, and, you know, water is freezing, expands when it freezes, and then starting to crumble the concrete. So one way to do it is to kind of, as much as possible, water membrane it. So you ensure that you don't have any aggravation later in other areas as well.
All right, very good. Okay. So I guess we'll try that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew. You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 514-790-0800, 924. News is on the way at 930. We'll go to Greg out in DDO for a call before we break for news. Greg, you want to talk to Walter about your pool fence?
Yeah, that's correct, Ken. Great to hear your voice again, and good morning, Walter.
Good morning.
So just basically the last time, or your last couple conversations ago, you were saying the pool fence has to be 36 inches. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered where you got that information from, because everything we're seeing is it has to be 4 feet.
Yes. So you mean that the height of the fence or the emplacement of the fence? Okay. So no, you probably misunderstood me. What I meant is where the fence needs to be installed vis-a-vis the pool.
Correct.
The distance between the water and where the fence is installed, not the height of the fence itself.
Okay, because we were told 1 meter from the pool edge, 4 feet high.
Correct. So the 1 meter is exactly it. 4 feet high is exactly it. You're absolutely right on both counts.
Okay, my apologies. I misunderstood.
No. You don't have to apologize. And where we were having the issue is how far they wanted to install it, because we wanted to ensure that the border that is around the pool is all what is going to be used for that new law, without having to make the house owner expand their walkway just because, you know, they started with something crazy and then they modified it afterwards. But
Much appreciated. I'm still waiting for the approval of the permit that I sent in, and I'll just warn your listeners, it's expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap for sure.
No. Anyway, much appreciated. Thanks for clarifying. And
thanks,
good morning,
Greg.
Again.
Thank you very much, Greg. 9:26. I'm going to throw a Maria, by the way, stand by out in St. Lazare. We're going to get to you right after the news. A text question, if you don't mind. We got a couple of minutes here. Good morning, Walter. I have a small bathroom, approximately 7 by 5 feet, with an alcove tub. Mm-hmm. We recently put down a new plywood subfloor and then added cement board on top with the intention to put a Schluter Dietra heated floor on top of that. The guy at the tile store said the cement board should be removed because it'll make the grout crack. Our walls are already up and the tub is sitting on the cement board. Do we proceed as planned or take up the cement board from the floor except for under the tub? Thank you in advance. That's Katrin.
I really don't understand the logic behind installing a cement board on the floor.
Really?
That is not made for that reason whatsoever. So the guy from the hardware store is right. That's number one. Number two, if you have a Dietra, you don't need to double the plywood. So let's say she takes out the cement board and she have the existing plywood that is there. Rescrew the plywood, make sure it's nice and solid, it's clean. And then if you install a Dietra on top of that, then you don't need to double it with anything else. So you could save that height. So that cement board, in essence, could just come out and nothing have to be replaced by it if you're going with Dietra. But yes, he's absolutely right. That cement board is not made to be structural that way at all. So I don't know where, who came up with that idea, but it was not a great idea to begin with.
We got a call. We got a text from Dave in Gatineau. He's listening. He says, should I leave my central air conditioning fan on all the time or do I throw it on automatic?
Keeping it on all the time is best practice just because it circulates the air in a continuous fashion and it does not spend much hydro. So if you speak to any ventilation technician, that seems to be the common advice, is keep your fan on all the time.
Very good. It's 9:28. News is standing by. We're going to take a little break and come right back with Walter Assey from Renovco on more of your phone calls at 514-790-0800.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Call right now at 514-790-0800 if you'd like to talk to Walter Assey. Years of experience and all those projects at Renovco. He's got to talk to you. You have something going on at home that you need a little advice or guidance on. 514-790-0800. Call right now. We'll put you on the air. Maria is on the phone from St. Lazare. Hi, Maria.
Good morning, Ken. It's so nice to have you back, first off.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you.
I have a question for Walter, and nice to talk to you as well.
Good. I was just going to jump in and tell you, I hope the question's for Walter, because I'm not that handy.
I'm sure you'd be able to help. So I saw a health practitioner recently, and she recommended that I have my house tested for mold. I just wanted to know your thoughts on the efficacy of mold testing and what would be a one that would be efficient and accurate, and if this is even at all possible.
It is definitely possible. You have some type of sinus infections or respiratory issues?
No, actually, it would be a gastroenterology. Gastric issues, really.
Have you experienced any water damage in your home in the last few years?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
And there was some water infiltration on two occasions in the past 3 years, actually. Okay. The first one, I was able to clean it up rather quickly, and I don't think I had any residual damage from that. At the second time, maybe a little bit more, but when I pull the baseboard away from the wall, there doesn't seem to be any black mold or anything. I do have two sump pumps in the basement.
Mm-hmm. So the water damage happened in the basement?
Yes.
And was it because of a failure of a sump pump, power failure?
Both, actually. On one occasion, one issue, and then the other.
All right. And your basement is finished?
I would say 3/4, yeah. I mean, it's got cement floor, but otherwise there's gyp on the walls. And
okay, so the water went into the finished areas as well.
Yeah, it pretty well filled up the whole basement, actually.
So, I mean, I'm going to give you just a few things to go, as a list, I mean, to go down your list. Number one, and that's something we see very regularly, that people wait for the mold spores to show, or the mold colony, because the word spores would not make sense. Mold spores are microscopic fungi, so you technically you're not supposed to see it. So when you start seeing the black or the white or the yellow or the violet, because, you know, it does come in different colors, it's usually the colony you're seeing, and that's not the spores. So there's a misconception there.
So that's usually, what did you
the
say?
The colony, okay?
The colony,
so it takes,
gotcha.
It takes a lot of spores to get together to create a colony that becomes visible to the naked eye. Now, just as a rule of thumb, and that's, you know, that goes across the board, any material that is cellulose-based that gets wet, that is not mechanically dried within 24 to 48 hours,
okay,
will start forming mold. Okay, so there, you know, we tend to watch the material dry and say, "Oh, it's dry now, so I'm good. I'm not gonna have mold." Chances are you're wrong. So that's why in most cases when people have water damage, we say do emergency interventions right away. Let the team in. They do exploratory openings. They remove baseboards. They cut drywall, very precise incisions if you wish. They put machines. We inject air into the cavities. We disinfect. We do an ambient air shock, so we create an environment that the mold hates, so they don't. We don't encourage them to start growing at, you know. And if you do that within 24 to 48 hours of your loss, then chances are you are out of the woods. Okay, but the fact that you do it days or months later, now you're dealing with two different things. You're dealing with the mold decontamination aspect, which goes to another level, because now is most probably the air, the mold is in the air. So you need to attack that and then attack the material that has been compromised by the mold. So in most cases, this will be the air quality test will come back positive for the presence of spores. Okay, there are mold air testing companies, and there's many of them. So they come. What they do is they put a cartridge outside and a cartridge inside. So what they're doing is they're comparing the exterior air quality, and that becomes a normal standard versus the interior air quality in your home, okay? And then when the test results come out, they tell you what is in your air exactly, what kind of mold spores, the count spores, what is to be considered normal. For example, in nature we find a lot of cladosporum type species, and that's fine. So if you find it inside the home, as long as my standard for cladosporum is similar to what's on the outside, I have no issues with it. Even if you would have penicillin and there's penicillin on the outside within the same standards or lower, we're good. Where you're going to get in trouble, or where we start raising red flags, I should say, is when your air quality count of spores in your home is way higher than the outside, or if there are any spores, and that's very important when I tell you, even if I have a lower count, but I have species of mold that are not present on the outside, that also becomes an issue, okay? Even in certain cases, there are certain species like Stachybotrys, even if I have one or two, It's usually not a good thing.
They give you all this in the report?
They give you all of that in the report. And what I would recommend, because, I mean, you are paying per test per room. So let's say, you know, in your case, I would make them do the test in the finished area of the basement, not in the concrete area, because that's probably the place where it's causing you the most headaches, literally.
The whole basement is a cement floor.
But you said there's an area which is finished, like with drywall.
It's all the same. It's one big room. It's got a cement floor. It's got drywall. It's got doors, suspended ceiling.
Fine, that's good. So what you're going to do is, you know, if that's the case, you're probably the drywall is the area which is the most susceptible to have mold growth because of the paper backing to the outside. Mm-hmm. Have you taken out the mold, the baseboards?
I did. I peeled it back on one section, the one that would be the where the water would have built up the most.
Okay.
And behind there, it's dry. I see the baseboard. I mean, they're MDF, so I see like water stains on the MDF. But when you pull it back, there's nothing on the actual drywall.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, it's also going to boil down to did it go into the cavity and now it's forming in the cavity. So a lot of times you would see that and then you kind of cut the bottom of the drywall. That's mm-hmm. something you could do also, by the way, is you cut the bottom of the drywall below the baseboard and then you flip it around and you look at the paper to see if there's any contamination on the drywall itself.
Oh, that's a good idea. I can do that. Yeah.
So, and that way when you put your drywall, your baseboard back, you don't have to fix the drywall anymore, and deal with that. But so companies that do air quality tests, you would have companies like Enviro Option. You can have companies like Jasfor, Air Conseil. So all of these guys, they do air quality tests. It takes about a week to get the results, and at least you'll know what you're breathing and what you're dealing with.
How long are they in the house for?
Literally 20 minutes. Really? So it's 5 minutes outside, 5 minutes inside, about 10 minutes to set up.
Okay.
And then you'll have your whole report, and that will give you a good idea of what you're dealing with.
Lots of information there, Maria.
Yeah, lots. I'm just curious, do you have a ballpark figure what that could cost?
Depending on how many tests you're going to do, but usually, and depending on the companies too, because they have different pricing, anywhere mm-hmm. between $500 to $1,000 would be where you're going to find the different quotations at.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of it, honestly, is to send you the technician, the setup, and then it comes back, and then send it to the lab and then get the result back. So $500 to $1,000 is usually what they would charge. And they're charging for a minimum of two tests because the exterior test is charged for, and that's like non-negotiable. Without it, you don't have a normal standard to compare to. Mm.
There you go, Maria.
So, okay, because the suggestion was these kits that you can get, and I saw some even on like Amazon, but... I mean,
who suggested
$70? I don't know what that's going to give me as far as
no. So these kits are for swabs, okay?
Yeah.
Swabs do not tell you what you're breathing.
No.
So that is just when you are looking at a material, you're not sure if it has mold on it or not. So that's not really an accurate. For health reasons, we transition automatically to an air quality test, because truth be told, Maria, in certain mm-hmm. cases, we find mold, but not necessarily present in the air. Why? Because that mold is more in wall cavities. So eventually it would make it to the air or in subfloors and what have you. But at that particular moment, it was just contained in the subfloor and with very little non-viable spores coming up in the air. But in your case, because you are suffering from a medical issue, then the air quality would be the right test for you. Don't waste your money on swab tests.
There you go.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all of your great information.
You're welcome.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio. CJAD 800.
Going to get to a call from Jay here in the Ville Marie Borough in just a second, Walter. But from the text line of 514-800, by the way, the phone number is 514-790-0800. It says, Walter, I'm replacing my furnace with a heat pump. I have a wood stove on the main floor as a backup of sorts. I'm concerned about when it gets really cold and the heat pump shuts off. I have drain pipes that like to freeze in certain situations. So I'm looking at either insulating the pipes or using heat tape to wrap the pipes with. Does either option sound viable to you? What would be the best product or features to look for?
So I'm not understanding when she says she's replacing her furnace with a heat pump, because technically you always need a furnace, even if you have a heat pump. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense.
Okay.
We would need to ask a bit more questions about that. Now, I mean, the fact is the newer heat pumps are mainly used probably 95% of the time, because they go to minus 30. So yes, the whole home would be technically heated with a heat pump. Unless the temperature falls below minus 30, then the furnace would kick in. So to answer that question adequately, I would really need to ask her a lot more questions.
All right. Text her if you're listening. We just need a little more information on that before we can zero in on it. Let's go to Jay. Jay, good morning.
Morning.
You want to talk about steel beams?
Yeah, I was wondering, Walter, I'm building a new house, and I'm wondering if the main part, the floors, if I'm better off with glue lam and then plywood and then hardwood, or steel and then concrete and then the engineered hardwood.
So your question is based on what, as far as structural integrity?
What would be more cost effective, glue lam or steel?
Well, with no doubt, it would be the glue lam. Because with steel, like you said, it's going to be the steel and the concrete combination, which have its own positives in a way for things like water infiltration, water damage, because you don't have the rot and everything else to deal with. But the cost factor for the glue lam is a lot cheaper for sure.
Significantly, like half, or
I would believe on the total build would be about 30%. Now, the other thing that might play into this, believe it or not, is like the stock market. Sometimes the price of steel goes up, and the price of wood does not. So that makes the vector much bigger. But usually, it's about 30%.
Right, but for the main beams of the house, would it be better for steel or for glue lam?
So for the main beams of the house, usually your structural engineer will tell you where you're going to go with metal beams, because the thing with steel beams is in certain areas, the span is what's going to make him really decide.
Right.
And then the height. If you're clearing something with steel, you tend to be able to have a shorter beam in order for you to, if let's say it's on a staircase and you want to clear your head. So that is another thing that you would have to have a discussion with the structural engineer. Mostly the span is what we worry about the most when we're going to make that decision.
Uh-huh.
More than the solidity. I mean, if the span is because the laminated beams are they're great structurally. I have nothing to say about them.
Uh-huh.
The only time you might get in trouble is in certain lengths and certain clearances. And that's where your structural engineer will be able to assist you, because they would know what the longest spans are, where they would recommend the metal beams in this case.
There you go.
Because you could do a combo as well, Jay. You know that, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. Cheers.
Cheers.
We have time. We have 2 minutes to sneak in Aldo out in Pierrefonds. Aldo, good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. Good
morning.
I'd like to know, like last week I painted my, I would stay in my deck, and as I was coming down the stairs, I dropped a little bit of paint on the cement landing. Hmm. Is there a product on the market that will get rid of that without leaving a stain?
Paint on cement.
Sorry?
Oh, I'm just repeating your paint on cement, right?
Yeah, it's a wood stain.
Yeah, okay.
It's a wood stain, is that what you said? Oh, wood stain.
Yes.
Okay. Without leaving a stain, I would say no, because it's painted your stairs, right?
It's a wood stain, yes.
Okay.
Well, put it this way. When I had some paint on my hands, I washed it off with water. But I don't want to – is it possible if I could use – because some people told me to use a pressure hose with a light steel wool and with a little light dishwashing soap.
Yeah, that will leave it – that will kind of take out the paint with it. The problem is that to solve that problem, is, ironically, you have to put a paint remover, which will remove the stain but will also remove part of the paint underneath it. And then maybe you could touch it up. So you're kind of in this pickle of a situation. The steel wool will actually abrasively as well remove the paint. So it's pretty much...
Okay. I was also told to use an electric grinder.
But then again, that means you're removing the stain and then you're removing the paint under it. So you're not really...
Actually, it's just cement. There's no paint under it. I just want to remove the paint spot.
Okay. Okay, that's a different story. So there's different ways. Is this oil-based or water-based?
I think it's water-based.
Okay. So water-based, you could try with a paint remover. If that
doesn't... wouldn't leave a stain? Like Varso? Like I didn't touch it.
If it does...
I didn't use any chemicals at all. Okay. I figured if I was Varso, it'll probably leave the Varso stain.
If it does... There is a product that, for some reason, it's only sold at Canadian Tire, or I was only able to find it at Canadian Tire. It's called Oil Lift.
Oil Lift.
Yeah. So that's mainly done to remove oil stains, but at the same time, it takes care of a lot of other types of stains. You put it, there's a dwell time. Then you use a brush and you wash it with water. And then from there, you wash it again. You wait a couple of days, and you usually when it dries up, most stains are able to be lifted by that.
Okay, so it's oil lift.
Oil lift. There you go, Aldo.
Canadian.
Okay,
guy.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Walter.
Yes, sir.
Let's do lunch.
Anytime.
Great to see you again.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for a great hour. Hey, it's 9:58. News is standing by. Jimmy G, thank you very much for running the show. Behind the glass and the board. Lisa's standing by. I see you ready to go. Lisa Christensen, the car show, and then Mandy and the wine show. Unwind between 11 and noon. Leave it right here on a Saturday morning on CJAD 800.